$1 billion to saturate television and radio with disinformation campaigns about these standards. And the media has just been pretty quiet on this. When you look at the major media outlets, they've given almost no attention to this issue until just the last few days. And it's sad that an issue of this importance that affects literally all Americans has gotten so little attention from our mainstream press.
We've been speaking with David Barron, managing attorney with Earth Justice, online at earthjustice.org. Thank you, David Barron, for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find them on FAIR's website, fair.org. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
Good evening, KABU listeners. The time is now 6 p.m. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, we have a Bread and Roses Hot Topic conversation tonight. Please be ready to call in with some commentary and listen up. Until then, though, we have a few words from our sponsors right after this.
KABU Community Radio is seeking an individual or group to contract with to help build our next 3-year strategic plan. KABU embodies equitable social change, shares knowledge, and fosters creativity by delivering locally rooted and diverse music, culture, news, and opinions with a commitment to the voices of oppressed and underserved communities. We've been serving the Portland community since 1968 and are one of the oldest independent community radio stations in the country. The person or group who is selected will co-lead the development of a strategic plan with the KABU Strategic Planning Support Work Group, made up of volunteers, board members, and staff. More details about the application process can be found at kabu.fm/planRFP2015.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of What Can I Do? Spaceship Earth at Mississippi Pizza on October 4th from 5 to 8 p.m. Spaceship Earth is a multimedia production by Laurie DeMaron about being more mindful of our actions. Also performing will be special guest Eva Riversong of Portland's local band Soul Nectar. Again, that's What Can I Do? Spaceship Earth, October 4th at 5 p.m. at Mississippi Pizza, 3552 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven cooperative striving to provide access to whole foods customers can trust. People's features farm-direct organic produce, bulk foods, a weekly year-round farmers market, and everyone is welcome. Located on Southeast 21st and Tibbett Street between Division and Powell, more information's at peoples.coop.
Marching at the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Marching, so many women dead. We cry through our city, their ancient call for bread. Our stomachs are empty, but our hearts are hungry.
Welcome to Bread and Roses. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists bringing you feminist news and public affairs programming every Friday at 6 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM. Women have had this forum on KBOO since 1978. The Bread and Roses Collective always welcomes new collective members, no experience necessary. So if you would like to host, produce, or engineer with us, contact KBOO's volunteer manager at volunteer@kboo.org. You can also find Bread and Roses on the web, www.kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can listen to past shows, share comments, or show ideas. You can also like us on Facebook at KBOO Bread and Roses, and now find us on Twitter at Bread Roses Radio. I'm your host tonight, Pamela Santos, with new co-host Nia Nguyen. Welcome to Bread and Roses, Nia.
Hello.
So tonight we're just going to launch into a very, as our board engineer said, hot topic, and we will probably take up the whole show without too many breaks for calls from our listeners tonight. We're going to be talking about the Roseburg shooting yesterday at Umpqua Community College, and a lot of what we're trying to do today, we preempted a completely different show topic tonight because we felt that there's going to be a lot of I want to say we needed to have a space to process this level of tragedy. Roseburg is only 3 hours south of Portland. There's a few of us that know people who are from that town. And a lot of what we're trying to do today is to talk about guns in America in a way that it's not about what others may criticize as politicizing the issue. I think it's never too soon. I mean, at what point, with how many shootings that there are here, mass shootings in the United States, when is the appropriate time for us to talk about gun safety? When is the appropriate time to talk about the lives lost and what constitutes domestic terrorism? And a lot of what we will try to see about giving voice today is how we can help. Today they just put together, there was a press conference, and we now know the names of the victims lost yesterday. I'm making, along with Nia, the choice today to not actually name the shooter, but we are going to give space to the victims. So Nia, just turn it over to you.
Yeah, sure. So I will be giving out the names of the victims, and they are in our thoughts and prayers. So we've got Lucero Alvarez, who was 19. Trevin Taylor Anspach, who was 20. Rebecca Ann Cardenas, who was 18. Quinn Glenn Cooper, also 18. Ken Saltmarsh Dietz, 59. Lucas Ebel, 18. Jason Dale Johnson, 33. Lawrence Levine, 67. And Serena Donmore, 44. These were the 9 victims that were killed yesterday in the mass shooting in Roseburg.
A lot of the thought process when I was talking about this with Nia earlier is
sometimes there can be too much of something. So there are mass shootings, there's loss of lives, and we never have the space to process this together. And it was already going to be on our minds. We were going to talk about it in the first maybe 10 minutes, and then I just didn't want to switch over.
Yeah, I felt like it was necessary to have a whole show on this event, because this is something that we need to talk about. I mean, we were going to do a show on gentrification, especially here in Portland, but, you know, I thought it was just more important to just bring this into light. I mean, it happens so rapid, and it's like Obama that said that it's like this has become routine for us you know, it's like routine for him to make these speeches about this, and it's routine for us to kind of, it's like, it feels like when something like this happens and people, like the news is heard, people tend to just say, oh, well, that's just a part of it. You know, that's, well, I guess these things happen. And I'm not saying that everyone does that. Like there are people that are deeply hurt and very traumatized by this, that I don't want to say that it's like we've become numb to it, but it's like, when is it too much to take? And when is it too much to just keep silent about it?
I'm not going to go too much into a long monologue or preface before we get to the first caller. But I wanted to at least say, so I'm from New York, and we don't have to think about mass school shootings largely. I'm a mom, and when the Sandy Hook shooting happened a few years ago, it deeply affected me in that moment and for a long time afterwards. But it's a very different culture out there in the school environments. In New York City public schools, you have a lot of levels of security before you can enter a building. Sometimes you may have metal detectors. At least you're going to have a desk with a security guard. If not, just even a school staff member kind of patrolling and being in the hallways. You sign in. There's always, in some ways, a checkpoint. And I had a really good open conversation with the principal back then, immediately after, sent a note to all of the staff and teachers there that I know how much they care about the children. And so I know that they would protect them if anything were to happen. But largely, it's just not commonplace to do that in the five boroughs, to worry about it. So it wasn't something that I could relate to as a tangible, possible fear that it could happen, but I definitely felt a lot of empathy and sympathy for Newtown and the families. And then they keep happening. So I moved to Portland, and as soon as as my family and I, we landed, late at night, the very next day was the Reynolds shooting. So wake up to the news, and I go through a lot of trouble to move us, and I just thought to myself, oh my gosh, I just moved my child across the country to run the risk of being in a place where people can walk in and terrorize children. So that was not too far back, and we're here now, the day after Roseburg, and we're having this conversation again about what to do about the kinds of guns that are available, the kinds of guns that can kill 10 people in 10 minutes. The kinds of,
I mean, like, most kinds can kill 10 people, like, right?
I mean, all those there's, in New Jersey, they tried a lot. I mean, Governor Chris Christie blocked a lot of the legislation to not make available the kind of, it's the kind of where it's, you're pretty much just putting out a lot of bullets in a short amount of time, and also bigger bullets. And at least a lot of what's happening, I would rather call it gun safety than gun control. But again, I just didn't want to take too much time before we get to our first caller. We have Mary.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Mary is was actually the host last week, so.
So how are you guys doing today? I hear you're talking about Roseburg.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, first and foremost, I want to say that everybody is a victim in a tragedy like this. Yeah. It's not just the people who lost their lives or got hurt or their families. It's everybody that's affected by this. Even those of us who don't live in Roseburg, who have children that go to school, or even know somebody who has a child that goes to school.
Yeah.
So, you know, my heart bleeds for those, you know, who are actually, you know, affected in the moment at the scene. And, you know, also I want to say that, you know, it's really, to me, unfortunate that we even have to sit here and have a conversation about guns in schools. When I was growing up, that didn't happen, you know. Not saying that it never happened, maybe it just wasn't televised, I don't know, but we're sitting here in 2015 having to speak to our young children about how to handle a gun, how to be safe, like what to do in a situation like this, and we're talking about our teachers carrying guns. Really? This is serious. I mean, this isn't just something that people should just brush off. This is, like, really, really serious. And, you know, for me, it starts at home. There are signs to recognize, you know, when somebody's in distress or whatever it is that they're thinking. You can see the signs. And we need to take better proactive caution with our own kids so that things like this don't happen. You know, it's crazy that somebody is able to go in and get so much of an arsenal and, like you said, walk into a school and just shoot people.
Right, right.
You know, how did he even get in the school in the first place? He had so much guns and all that. How did he even get in the first place with all that?
Well, you know, I mean, Mary, like, I have a, you know, you're saying this is serious, you know, to, this is very serious stuff, matter right here. But my question for you is, why aren't we talking about this stuff in, you know, our personal lives and what
is it going to take?
Yeah, what is it going to take? When does this conversation start with everyone around us as a community?
Absolutely. Changing something.
And I hear that. It starts yesterday.
But
know?
I mean...
I know.
People don't... Well, for me, I can only speak for myself, and I'm a very proactive mother. I teach my children about life in general, the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. You know, they are out there. There are people out there who do things that aren't right. So they do need to know that. But, you know, there needs to be, I don't know, I'm all for talking to your children. Mm-hmm. Let it out there. You know, I'm all for telling them the real truth about things. You know, and it's not a gun that kills people. It's the person behind the gun that kills them. You know, the gun doesn't fire itself. So we need to start with what is wrong with the generation coming up where they're going into movie theaters and schools and killing people for whatever reason it may be. We need to figure that out because it's not going to stop if we don't. And if people don't stand up and say, hey, you know, my son, he's a little different. Or my neighbor's son, you know, has this attitude all the time or whatever, and notice that, and, you know, bring it to the light, bring it out, let them feel how they feel or whatever. You may be saving 9 or 18 or 20 or 100 people's lives. You know, I don't know, it's like a half and half for me. You know, part of me says,
yeah,
I want my kids to get their education. But what kind of education are they getting if they have to worry every day about whether or not they're going to get shot in their own classroom? And that's what kids worry about now. I mean, that's just what they worry about now. Now we have to worry about that.
They actually have changed things since Sandy Hook. I only found out later that in the schools in New York and in here, too, they were practicing lockdown drills. Mm-hmm. So these kids in Portland are practicing, you know, what to do. There's protocols that people have to think about and plan and train teachers and staff what to do. It's an unfortunate thing where it feels to me like we are putting more effort and thought into defense of these spaces rather than to think about, I wouldn't call it prevention. I would call it, it's almost like planning for safety. I don't think having lockdown drills or protocols of what to do to close the door and blockade a classroom door is the only thing that we can do. Like we can do that, but I don't think it should stop there. And it's really hard to know how to even start with this when.
Right. You know, when I was in school, we had different classes, like elective classes, home ec, auto mechanics, drama, theater, things like that. All of that's been taken away. The kids in schools nowadays don't have that. They don't have that outlet in school to you know, get that out. Even some sports are being cut. So, you know, we need to start creating these things again so the kids have something constructive to do with themselves when they start feeling whatever they feel. I personally don't like guns, mm-hmm. but at this point, you know, if it was a natural thing in school, like when we did a home ec, it was just a class. So naturally, every day we would go to school and we would go to class and we would learn things in everyday life. But they don't have that, so now we have to teach our kids about this gun safety, not because we want to, but because we have to. We're being forced into it. It doesn't come naturally to us because we're not used to having to teach our children about something so violent. Mm.
And not even just something so violent, but that it's possible, that it's quite possible, just like what they did in the Cold War time, and or preparing to, you know, go under your desk. If there was a nuclear bomb during that nuclear era of fear. But I just want to, I know you might not have that much time, Mary, but do you want to have, before you go, any closing thoughts?
You know, I feel like, you know, as a parent and as a community health worker and somebody who's involved in my community, I feel like we as the mothers and we as the parents and the teachers and the friends of our children have to start at home. It has to start there. You have to be able to teach your children regular things about life that include, unfortunately, the violent part of it also. But when you don't and things like this happen, then everybody's all up in arms. We don't know what to do. Now we got to do this. Now we got to do that. We taught our kids regular education about life and things that could happen, then maybe they would realize they don't need to be doing it themselves. My generation isn't doing it. These are the kids that come up in my children's generation that are doing this. That's crazy to me.
I just have one thing I wanted to ask you. Have you one last thought about the fact that I'm pretty sure, and Nia's right with me, that most, if not all, of mass shootings are done by men.
Yeah.
There hasn't been a female
That's because domestic females terrorist. Are more emotional. But that's another topic, actually. We can have a conversation about that.
I just wanted to point that out before we finish up.
We have small brains. That's why, Ken West.
Oh, and this is a callback to our last week that Mary hosted, and we had a very charming caller who definitely wanted to let us know how women's brains were smaller.
So we need to be on a stripper pole.
Well, you know, it all goes together. And honestly, I think I'm in some ways, Mary, a lot of this is sort of just having to have some relief of the tension. You know, it's been really hard to prepare and think about how we were going to tackle this topic tonight. So I'm glad for a little tiny little break, a breath of levity with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, be open about it. This is something that we need to stop doing and being so secretive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, secrets hurt people. You know what I mean? So I feel like we need to be open with our neighbors, with our friends, with our kids. We need to be open and honest and, you know, just put it out there.
Right, yeah.
That's how I feel.
Thank you so much, Mary, for taking the time to call in. And we'll see you soon.
All right.
Bye, hon. Okay. So we're going to be playing a clip right now.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And it's just of a speech earlier by Senator Jeff Merkley about Roseburg.
We have a long series of names branded on our hearts from across the nation. Places like Columbine, like Sandy Hook, and now here at Umpqua Community College here in Roseburg. It's a list of names that no community ever wants to have be included in. And at this moment, this horrific, this senseless act has broken hearts, every heart here. This is a small community. It's a community where everyone knows someone who was hurt or killed yesterday. The community has come together in an extraordinary fashion. The first responders responded quickly and competently. The sheriff, the county commissioners, and the mayor and the city manager all jumped in to make decisions in a flash to respond and address it, the situation. They did an incredible job, but there is no response that can repair the broken hearts. Now, yesterday, when I walked back from the Capitol to the Hart office building, Hart Senate office building, I was told there's been a tragedy in Oregon. There's been a mass shooting in Oregon. And Senator, it's from your home county, from Douglas County. I have a special place in my heart for this county. I was born in Myrtle Creek, just south of here. And when I was about 2, we moved here to Roseburg. I went to first grade here. I have family on both sides, my father's side and my mother's side. And this morning I was asked about my family down here. And I must say, I never thought it could possibly be that my family, my extended family, my cousins were directly affected. But as I said, this is a small town and everyone's affected. And one of the individuals who died is the great-granddaughter of my first cousin. So she is my cousin. And I just tell you, every heart is damaged and broken, and this community is coming together to embrace each other, to exercise the companionship, the love, the affection. No one could have envisioned that here in this wonderful, beautiful place of Roseburg that this could happen. It is going to give us all food for thought. This long list gets longer with every passing week and month. We've had 18 school shootings here in 2015. We've had 45 mass shootings in America in 2015. So we will all be carrying in our hearts not only the sorrow and the pain, but also the responsibility to ponder what we can do, that there will be fewer cities, that this list will not continue to grow as it has. Thank you.
And if you're tuning in, that was Senator Jeff Merkley talking about Roseburg. This is Pamela for Bread and Roses with Nia, and we are taking callers on the line tonight. We still have a little bit of a little more than a half hour to go. You can call the KBOO studio at 503-231-8187. Again, the number is 503-231-8187.
So, yeah, call in and just let us think what you have to give us a little of what you have to say. I'm going to be talking about a hero of that event. His name was Chris Mintz. He was 30 years old, and he was shot basically 5 to 7 times. And he's in the hospital right now. But he's a Army veteran that, I guess, when he heard the first gunshot, he just jumped into the crossfire, and he was shot 5 to 7 times in that process. But he tried to stop the murderer.
Incredibly brave, and probably in that moment just probably falling back on training, not really thinking too much. From what the news had reported, it was his 6-year-old son's birthday, and so when another person in the space was trying to give first aid and comfort him, he just kept repeating, "It's my son's birthday. It's my son's birthday."
Hey, isn't there actually a like a GoFund for him to?
That raised over $100,000, I think, already, and that was yesterday.
To go with the conversation, like, what, you know, I feel like, yeah, it's like, I feel like it's an access, like, what's the accessibility of, like, these kids, or at least, you know, in this case, he's a man, 26 years old, like, getting access to these guns so easily and just walking onto campus, and nobody even bother to even question him.
Well,
he had like six guns.
Yeah, it's
six assault.
And this isn't the first time. I mean, there's still a lot of people that remember Virginia Tech. It's just something that unfortunately.
But I guess it's pretty common in Roseburg.
Is it pretty common? Do you mean having like big bags or something that he wasn't?
No, to really have guns like in Roseburg, because it's a hunting community.
Oh.
You know, like it's that's what my boyfriend says. He's from Roseburg.
And how do you know anything about how the people he knows over there are kind of dealing and coping a little bit about what
in the case of, like, I think it's like hit my boyfriend pretty rough. Like, he's been feeling very a lot of dread, you know, like he's from that community, and like he completely understood like where all of that mentality came from. And
you mean mentality really, like with gun culture?
Yeah, the gun culture. Okay. That goes on there, and like it's just he's really hurt, but I think he was just more shocked that when he told people in his community, or when he called them to see how they were doing and all that stuff, mm-hmm. they were nonchalant about it. just, they were like, oh, that really sucks, you know? That's, I'm sorry that happened, but it's like, that's not the problem.
Is it something that they expected?
Yeah, it was something that they expected, but I mean, like, that's, it's a bigger problem like that than that. It's a problem on our whole national level. Like, these things happen so much that, like, this is the reaction that comes when news is told to members of the community, like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, mm-hmm. so this is what happened. Oh, that really sucks that
mm-hmm,
happened.
Mm-hmm. I think that this is me just theorizing here, that this could possibly be explained a little bit through this long process in our generation of being desensitized by this kind of tragedy, that we have to expect people to make their speeches, to have press conferences, to have an appropriate time for mourning. And then it happens again in a different city, and again, and again, and again. It's 45 shootings on a school campus in this year alone. It's only October. So we're going to go, we were just talking about the UCC student who was shot 7 times. There is some audio that of him speaking to ABC News.
Wounded in the shooting, 3 of them in critical condition, fighting for their lives. We are learning more about the victims and the shooter this morning, and ABC's Neil Karolinski is at the hospital in Roseburg. Good morning, Neil.
George, good morning. The CEO of Mercy Hospital here spoke just moments ago, saying they have never seen a tragedy of this scale before. You know, this is a very small community, and initially they were unprepared for the scope of this shooting. 7 people wounded and taken to hospital, including heroes, one of them that we're learning about this morning, an Army veteran. This morning, 30-year-old Chris Mintz out of surgery, recovering from 7 gunshot wounds. Witnesses say the student and Army vet charged straight at the gunman, trying to save who he could, telling others to run.
He ran to the library and pulled all the alarms, and he was telling people to run, grabbing people, telling them, you just have to go. And he actually ran back towards the building where the shooting was, and he ran back into the building, and I don't know what happened to him.
According to his family in North Carolina, Mintz told the gunman it was his son's birthday.
Gets shot 3 times, hits the floor, looks up at the gunman and says, it's my son's birthday today. Gets shot 2 more times.
They're just grateful he's alive.
He walked away with his life, and that's more than so many other people did.
Overnight, police and FBI swarming this apartment complex in Winchester, Oregon, where the man allegedly behind the carnage, 26-year-old Chris Harper Mercer, lived with his mom. An officer pictured questioning Mercer's mother outside.
They just thought he was an odd guy.
ABC News learning Mercer allegedly left behind writings, officials describing them to ABC News as rambling utterances with overtones of racial and social hatred. He blogged about the Roanoke, Virginia shooter, saying, seems like the more people you kill, the more you're in the limelight. His last upload, a documentary about the Sandy Hook killings.
I did see him at the time walking or leaving his apartment and coming home with what looked like gun cases, him and his mom both. And he actually did say that he used to go shooting at some range. I don't know where it was.
Mercer's father this morning saying he and his family are reeling.
Obviously, it's been a devastating day. Devastating for me and my family. Shocked. Shocked is all I can say.
And we're back on Bryn Roses tonight. I'm Pamela Santos along with Nia Nguyen. That was just audio about the hero. We're trying to spotlight the victims, the town, the community, and the hero, Chris Mintz, who tried his best to bring down the shooter and was shot instead. What do you think, Nia, about, in that case, about how we want to talk about heroism, and that we're trying not to, the choice we make about not naming the shooter is just so that other people who want to get fame or infamy for themselves through the mass murder of other people, of other human beings, that they won't get that, that I want to say place in even history or memory, by doing something so evil, even after that, after they are dead, that they could be remembered for this. So I don't want to have us think about his name, and that's why in a lot of the media that I've been reading and consuming since then, people have been focusing on kind of some kind of good, I want to say, out of this.
Well, I mean, I think it's very disturbing in that fact that, like, there are some people that would actually think that they would achieve fame by doing something so horrific like this, you know, like, but, you know, in regards to the heroism that, you know, Mintz, like, he took action and he, like, in that moment, like, I was, in that moment, every minute counts, every second counts. And he took that instance, probably from his, you know, training in the army, like, to just stop this shooter and just, like, stall him as much as he can. And, like, what did that clip say? He ran back into the building.
Mm-hmm.
He ran back into the building to stop this, right? So to me, that does define it as heroism. Like, he is sacrificing himself for some kind of, like, to stop this murderer from continuing what he has to continue.
Or at least to have, to minimize or do his best to have
his damage,
less
yeah.
loss of life. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So we have another caller. We have George on line one to talk about gun control.
Oh, no.
And we don't.
Oh.
And I'm so sorry, George. You can call us at KBOO at 503-231-8187. Again, we are preempting our originally planned show for tonight to talk about the recent tragedy in Roseburg on the Umpqua Community College campus yesterday. We know that there's a lot of other shows and spaces where people have been going over the events of yesterday and the aftermath. And in some ways, a lot of what we are aiming to do, at least by our own good intentions, is to try to hold space for processing. This is a state tragedy. This is a tragedy, like, on a national level. And I think that if we don't really take the time to acknowledge the gravity of every time that there is a loss of life, I don't believe in us having kind of a hierarchy of, okay, well, we're going to rate this tragedy on the basis of how many lives, or we're going to decide which, you know. I think that every single time that we have an act of violence. Mm-hmm.
And like, this tragedy, it didn't happen on like in a vacuum. This is just one of a long string of violence that has been occurring since what, the 1966. Like the United States is known for their gun violence here. Like, why aren't we talking about this violence and the gun control that is a necessary conversation?
Well, there's, I think a lot of what we wanted to talk about is covered in this upcoming audio, President Obama talking about gun control.
There is a gun for roughly every man, woman, and child in America. So how can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer? We know that states with the most gun laws tend to have the fewest gun deaths. So the notion that gun laws don't work or just will make it harder for law-abiding citizens and criminals will still get their guns, it's not borne out by the evidence. We know that other countries, in response to one mass shooting, have been able to craft laws that almost eliminate mass shootings. Friends of ours, allies of ours, Great Britain, Australia, countries like ours. So we know there are ways to prevent it. And of course, what's also routine is that somebody somewhere will comment and say, Obama politicized this issue. Well, this is something we should politicize. It is relevant to our common life together, to the body politic. I would ask news organizations, because I won't put these facts forward, have news organizations tally up the number of Americans who've been killed through terrorist attacks over the last decade and the number of Americans who've been killed by gun violence. And post those side by side on your news reports. This won't be information coming from me, it will be coming from you. We spend over $1 trillion and pass countless laws and devote entire agencies to preventing terrorist attacks on our soil, and rightfully so. And yet, we have a Congress that explicitly blocks us from even collecting data on how we could potentially reduce gun deaths. How can that be? This is a political choice that we make. To allow this to happen every few months in America. We collectively are answerable to those families who lose their loved ones because of our inaction. When Americans are killed in mine disasters, we work to make mines safer. When Americans are killed in floods and hurricanes, make communities safer. When roads are unsafe, we fix them to reduce auto fatalities. We have seatbelt laws because we know it saves lives. So the notion that gun violence is somehow different, that our freedom and our Constitution prohibits any modest regulation of how we use a deadly weapon, when there are law-abiding gun owners all across the country who could hunt and protect their families and do everything they do under such regulations. Doesn't make sense. So, tonight, as those of us who are lucky enough to hug our kids a little closer, are thinking about the families who aren't so fortunate, I'd ask the American people to think about how they can get our government to change these laws and to save lives and to let young people grow up. And that will require a change of politics on this issue. And it will require that the American people, individually, whether you are a Democrat or a Republican or an independent, when you decide to vote for somebody, are making a decision as to whether this cause of continuing death for innocent people should be a relevant factor in your decision. If you think this is a problem, then you should expect your elected officials to reflect your view.
And this is Bread and Roses. We are talking about the Roseburg shooting yesterday. That was just an excerpt from a speech by President Obama on the need for us to talk about gun control. We need to talk about the unique problem in a country like ours, about the frequency of mass shootings, and particularly ones on school campuses. 45 in this year alone. We have a couple of minutes still. You can call us at KBOO 503-231-8187. We are taking any calls about anything really to do with whether
how you
it's
feel, what you mm-hmm. think.
Anything
that you want to add to the conversation about what happened yesterday, and not just what happened yesterday, but a continuous event of violence that has been occurring with these mass shootings that has been going on here in the United States. And like, what is it about us that we just don't, like, it's like the elephant in the room. We don't want to talk about it. Why aren't we talking about it? And when we're talking about it, like, in most cases, like, we say that the perpetrator are, you know, they're crazy, or they're just, they weren't in their right mind to.
But, and definitely this is something that I heard at the earlier this morning show, Positively Revolting. Mm. Depending on what kind of shooter it is. So when you're talking about what race they are, what background they are, the common narrative that pops up in the media and in how people talk about it and discuss it amongst themselves is,
I mean, it's
if
only
it's a
been
black
like,
shooter.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been like, what, a couple of weeks since Ahmed was, you know, arrested for bringing a clock to school, and here we are. You know, this murderer just walked on campus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's...
So there's that dichotomy of, like, what...
That's perfectly... Like, you're reading my mind. I wanted to bring up that we have in this country, even before September 11, but especially afterwards, a deep-seated Islamophobia.
Yeah, I mean, it's upsetting to me that, like, we're not...
That we're on the watch for brown kids.
Yeah.
We're on the watch for Muslim kids who are making harmless clocks. And this poor kid is, this teenager is handcuffed, detained, isn't able to speak to his parents. And all honestly, his rights as an American... citizen, as an American here, they were violated. And yet, it's not something that his school reaction was to further talk about their response is appropriate, to talk about, well, we have to keep everybody safe. And yet you still have these other instances where they're not on the watch for someone who is not brown or black or Muslim or very obviously what some Americans consider foreign. The big problem that seems to still be happening on a daily basis is how we as Americans are letting what our implicit biases are affect policy, affect how we act in official protocol. So, and what I mean by that is it's very hard to just out and out. A few weeks ago, there was that special that we had for KBOO on ending white supremacy. And it's very hard to talk about racism with white people. And And that's why I'm bringing up implicit biases. You know, I'm bringing up the fact that different people will have stereotypes about their fellow Americans. And
well, I mean, they're already claiming that he's Muslim. They're already claiming that he, this shooter from Roseburg yesterday, is a Muslim.
There's still a lot of...
they're claiming a lot of things about him. But
yeah, it's really hard to... oh, my goodness. When Newtown happened, there were incredibly damaging reports that were not accurate at all. And in the beginning, when people are scrambling to scoop, to get the scoop and to get the news, there was jumping to the conclusion that... what kind of diagnosis the shooter has. And I remember very specifically that in Newtown, within a day or so, they, and I say they, the media, were able to access some medical records or talk to different sources, and they were positing that the shooter at Newtown was on the autism spectrum in some way. And so that was a very hard weekend because the shooting happened, I remembered it was a Friday, and that weekend was so hard for a lot of families with loved ones who are autistic and having to explain and have these really not conducive, not kind conversations with people who were ignorant. And so it encourages a lot of fear mongering of, well, maybe if we label it, maybe if we say what the diagnosis is, maybe if we can call it something, we can be on the lookout.
Well, maybe that diagnosis is not that particular person, but our society as a whole. Like maybe that sickness that is causing all this violence because it's happened so much. Maybe that is our culture and our society. Maybe that's the thing that we need to... Why don't we look at the mirror and look at ourselves as a society and as a culture and see what's going on over and over, and instead of just picking something out from a particular perpetrator, like the shooter, and saying, oh, well, this person is... blah, 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 this.
Yes. And
that is the reason why. But why don't we just look in the mirror and just say, as a community, we brought this on.
Or
why are the guns so accessible to these young young men?
They are young men. They are young men. That's a generalization.
Young men. Yes, yeah, right. They're all young men.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they so accessible? And why do we need to have so many guns?
I also want to put this back that why do these young men feel a need to use these guns to hurt and murder other human beings? That is something, I mean, obviously a larger question that we don't have time for. We're reaching the end of our show tonight. I am very grateful that... that Nia, that you and I have this space. I think we have quite a privilege.
Yeah, quite a privilege.
To be on the air. And to process this kind of openly, almost. It's like almost like a collective process of grieving. I'm just going to. We're going to be closing out with a song. It's called Shift Your Paradigm by Scott Blue Flames Kalama. And
you are listening to Bread and Roses, and I'm your host, Nia Nguyen. Tonight it was an honor and a privilege to talk with Salome.
So this is the funny thing, we have scripts. So
at the end anyway.
So it's an honor and a privilege always to be with Nia here. I'm Pamela Santos.
And I'm Nia.
And you can go to our website, Bread and Roses, either on KBOO.FM on Facebook or tweet at us at Bread Roses Radio. Thank you for listening. Bread and Roses is a collective of women-identified radio activists bringing you feminist news and public affairs programming every Friday at 6 p.m. Have a great week, everyone. Bye. Shifting paradigm.
Drift. I be shooting the moon while you in the snake pit. I be getting real money, you just on that counterfeit. I turn my life around, you just stop being pissed. I hold my hand out to help you get up. Only God can judge. I know I'm not perfect, so I'm not holding a grudge. I'll give you a nudge in a positive direction. Stay away from subjection, stay at attention, bring light to the night with your perception. This is all just a blessing in disguise. Change your approach of what underlies. Open up your eyes, all that negative energy needs to say goodbye. Open up your eyes, all that negative energy.
Well, thank you for listening to Bread and Roses. My name is Hemi Blue Rhino. Friday! Yes, it's time to partay. At KBOO, you're listening to 90.7 FM KBOO Portland, and it's that lovely time again for Hard Knock Radio for your Friday. Man, I'm excited for this one, I tell you. So that's coming up for you. Davey D and the family is going to be coming up at Hard Knock Radio right here at KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio.